Okay, if I can have your attention. We got lots of folks in the small room, so we're going to have to get quiet. It's kind of like camp when I do this. That means get quiet. Okay. First of all, I want to thank you for your attendance. Tell you that, and by the way, if everybody wouldn't mind, would you move over this way if there's room on your row? Because folks that come in late have to parade right down front here. Yes.
Do you have an extra pin that we can pass around with the sheet that's coming around?
I have one.
You need it in the back?
Oh, okay. Save your life, right there.
Okay, if I can have your attention again. And if you would, when you come in class, we only have one door here. If you would, start filling up on this side consistently. And one other request, and I should have made it before everybody came in, but if you make an effort to be here on time to start, this is a new format for me for Romans. I prefer having an hour and a half, but we're going to have about probably at the most about 40 minutes. And it's hard to get for me to get us to the point that I want us to get. And by the time we get there, then class is over. So we want to start as closely to on time as we possibly can. So if you'll try to get here on time, this class will be a study in Romans. There's some things yet to be worked out in the class. At some point, probably not today, but at some point, I'm going to try to take a minute or two at the beginning and let a couple of folks tell us about yourself, introduce yourself so we can get to know one another. This group is the fastest growing group in our congregation, and that makes it really good. We got more babies than we know what to do with around here, don't we? And that's a really neat thing. I've been in congregations where you didn't have any babies, and that's a really sad thing. So I'm glad to be teaching this group. Most of you have probably heard my spiel and are aware that since I first started preaching about 125 years ago, I have had a Romans class in my home and have used that as a method of evangelism, reach out to non-Christians as well as Christians. And it's my observation that Romans, the first eight chapters, is basically what we're going to focus on. Is as good for Christians as it is non-Christians. But if you are a Christian, I want you to be thinking about how you can use this to share the gospel with your non-Christian friends, because I'll tell you that if you use this properly, the way that Paul wrote it, and I don't purport to be able to be the perfect example of teaching that, but if you'll use it the way he wrote it, it will truly convert people. They're not just baptized. People are truly converted to the Lord. And the more we understand and appreciate our salvation and the basic fundamental principles of our salvation, then the more motivated we are and the more consistent we're able to be in our lives. My life is... is everybody... They look like we're scrunched up. Are we really scrunched up? Everybody okay? We're going to have to make sure, like today, it's really cool down in here. It's going to be, we're all really close. So if you want to scoot out a little bit, you can once you get to that side particularly. But my life, I grew up in the church and in a very conservative, as were probably most of the congregations 40 years ago. 50 years ago. I grew up not really believing I was going to make it to heaven. I really tried to be good and just didn't have any confidence whatsoever that I was going to be able to go to heaven. And I know that some times have changed in some ways, but I also know that human nature has not changed that much. And that even though some of us have learned to say the right things, that there's just a lot of us that still don't have very much confidence that we're going to make it to heaven. And we've learned to say the right things and answer the questions the right way. And if somebody asks us, if you died, would you know that you were going to heaven if you died tonight? Then we say yes, because the preachers beat us over the head so many times if we said no, till we don't say no anymore. But we still feel some of the no in our heart, even though we say yes. In my life, and the reason that I'm preaching is because of the first eight chapters of the book of Romans. And I don't know. I'm sure there have been people who fought it harder than I did. I just don't happen to know any of them. I really, really fought the concepts that I'm going to be sharing with you. I fought it hard. Partially because it seemed too good to be true to me. Because I grew up believing, even though nobody would ever say it, and nobody ever said it in those words, I believe you had to be good enough to go to heaven. And I tried to be good, and that's one of the most discouraging things that can happen to us. It's when you know that you have to be good, and you try to be good, and you can't be good. You know, maybe, and so you start looking at other people around you, and you find Christians that seem to be doing worse than you are, so you try to make yourself feel good with that and say, well, you know, look at the preacher, look at the preacher's kids, you know, look at this, the elder, look at the elder's kids, whatever, you know. And so you have all these jokes about preacher's kids and elder's kids and so forth. And by the way, in case you don't know it, there's some about members' kids, but they're within the circle of preachers and elders. You know, so. But we start measuring ourselves by others, and it's all a work system. And you end up not having any real security in your life and struggling for that, at least for a while. And there are lots of ways that people give up. Whenever you come, it begins to become obvious that you're not going to be good enough. Some people keep coming to church, and they just slide in and sit on the back row and get their ticket punched, and they come in late and leave early and get out. They're miserable. But they're miserable if they quit. And so it's kind of darned if you do and darned if you don't. And then there are some people that just say, I quit. I can't live it. And they give up. And other people become real critical of everybody else. Because somehow there's two ways to be righteous, at least from a kind of a generic standpoint. One is you can live it. You can really be righteous. Or you can do real good. And another way that's a lot easier is to criticize people who look like they might be doing better than you. And that's a trap that we fall into. And we look at other people and we start criticizing, it becomes a habit. And everybody's got to jump through your hoops. And everything, and life turns sour on you. You can't see anything good. And you criticize the church and you criticize everything about it. And that becomes a way of life. And if you find some of that in yourself, I want you to know that it doesn't have to be that way. It really doesn't have to be that way. You can find a peace and a confidence that you've never had before. And God makes that provision for you. For some of us, it means that we're going to have to do some changing of our life. It certainly means we're going to have to do some changing of our attitudes and understanding. But that's some of what I hope to be able to accomplish in this. And that's a pretty big job. That's a pretty big task. But I'll tell you that my life can literally, I really view my life in two parts. There was a me before Romans, and there is a me after Romans. And I like the me after Romans a lot better than the one before Romans. And so my life is divided up into before Romans and after Romans. And right in the middle of it, whenever somebody was teaching me, I was really an angry person. And I fought really, really hard. And fortunately, I had a really kind teacher who didn't try to press me against the wall and back me in a corner with arguments because, you know, I wanted to fight anyway. And I loved to argue anyway. And so whether I won or lost, I'd somehow make myself believe I won anyway. Any of you ever seen or witnessed or know anything about debates? I never have met anybody that lost a debate. Everybody wins. Because when you get through, you tell it the way you want to tell it. And that's the way we live our lives sometimes. We're miserable. You know, we won't say that. We're just unhappy and insecure, and we don't feel good about our relationship to God, and we certainly don't feel good about standing before God one day. But when you leave here, if you'll really give me your heart and really put some energy into understanding this, then you'll look forward to meeting God. And when you stand before Him, you will anticipate that with eagerness. And I want that for you. I want everybody to have that. Because when you have that, when you have that kind of security, it changes your whole outlook on life. You become a person that's a lot more pleasant to live with, and you're a better mother and father and employer and employee and Christian brother and sister. Your life is just radically different. And it just makes you a kinder, gentler, more secure person, somebody that's a lot more fun to be around. So, with a little bit of that introduction, we'll have a little more of that from time to time, and I may use some illustrations. I guess the people that probably are my very closest friends over a period of years are people that have been through my class in Romans. And this format of being in a large classroom is not my first choice. And that's not your fault. It's just that for the first time in my life since I came here, I find myself in a really neat, I guess, position of not being able to meet the demand for people who want to be in the class in my home. I can't hold enough classes to take care of that. And so you're kind of the recipient of that, the consequence of that, and in a way that's good and in a way that's not good, because this class is better if you got about 12 people in a circle sitting in somebody's living room with the fire going and everybody sitting cross-legged on the floor or whatever and got your Bibles open and in a small group. That's my ideal. I love it. This is the next best. And so I want you, and we if we need it, we have two quarters for this. So that's 26 weeks or 24 if we'll have probably some things happen. But so we've got some time here. I normally would take about 12 class periods, but they'd also be about an hour and a half each. But so we have some time, and I want you to ask questions. Because I found this out, and I'm not real great about stopping and asking if you have a question, because I have lots of things that I want to say. You know, my wife will tell you that, but I have a tendency to keep plowing. And so if you have something, a question or an observation, I'm asking you to share that. Because I found this out. If I say something or if a thought is introduced that you don't completely understand, that's where you're hung up and you don't get the rest of the class. That's where your mind stays and you're trying to sort out how could this be or what does this mean, and that's, you're hung up right there and you lose the rest of the class. And if you don't ask that question and have that question answered, then you lose the next class and the next class and the next class. You get hung up at that point where you don't understand. And in a setting like this, and this is a downside of this setting, there are some of you that are too shy to ask a question. I'm saying to you, the easiest way you're going to ever learn something is to ask a question and not have to learn it the hard way. You don't have to learn everything by sticking your finger to the stove to see if it's hot. Learn from other people's experience. That's the easiest way you're going to learn things. And so, not just in this class, I'm just saying this to you in general. If you see somebody who knows how to do something that you'd like to know how to do, go to them and ask them if they'd help you learn how to do that, or if they would explain this to you. That's the easiest, cheapest way that you're going to ever learn anything. And so don't be too shy to ask a question or make an observation. There will probably be some things that I will say that you will leave class and say, I don't know about that. I'm going to have to think about that some. I hope there will be some things like that. because it'll be a challenge. Some of these things will be a challenge to you. By the way, there were a couple of things thrown out in the sermon this morning that might be a challenge to you. I don't know if you picked them up or not, but anyway, there were a couple of pretty interesting things that people don't usually say that you might want to go home and do some thinking about. And if you're in second service, then maybe you can pick up on them when we get there. We are going to, I need everybody to help remind me to turn on the microphone. We're going to have a little digital recorder. We're going to put this on our website. And if you miss a class, which probably all of us will miss a class somewhere within 6 months, certainly, then go to the website and listen to that class before you come to the next one. Because one of the things that is a truism about this class is that if you miss the first two or three classes, you're going to really miss the foundation for the whole thing. This book builds on itself. And every single thought that comes out in the book of Romans is going to provide a foundation for something he's going to say later. And so people who come into this class, and we'll probably have some who will come in later down the road, some of you are going to help fill them in. Because the first section here that we're going to deal with is the foundation for the rest of it. And if you don't understand the first section, you're not going to understand the rest of it. There are two books in the New Testament that most people consider difficult. Actually, there are three. Revelation is one. Hebrews is another. Romans is another. Interestingly, I will put the Apocalypse by itself over here, Revelation by itself, but Hebrews and Romans are the two most fundamental books in the New Testament. And it's interesting that we consider them the most difficult. And what that says is that maybe our understanding is not as good as it ought to be about fundamental things. And most of us have grown up hearing, you know, five steps of salvation, hear, believe, repent, confess, and be baptized, and you know, we know all that, and we think that's the fundamentals. That's not really the fundamentals. There are some things that lie beneath all those things that go way deeper than those acts. And those acts are of no real value if you don't have some understanding of what lies beneath them. And again, the real long-term value of understanding the first eight chapters of the book of Romans is it puts something in you that nobody can take away from you for the rest of your life. And it's a really, really neat thing. And so I want you to have high expectations of this class. Now, you can keep your expectations of the teacher low. That'd help me out some. But what the book teaches, you can have high expectations. And I expect, and you will have what I consider a unique opportunity to learn something that's going to help you very, very much for the rest of your life. And for some of us, I hope it will mark a real change in our life. I still get letters from people who've taken the class back many, many years ago and from their children and so forth, telling how that changed their whole family and how the whole direction of their life changed, and they can go back and see that in their life. So I hope that some of that will be true for you. I'm in a little bit of a quandary about how much stuff to hand out and how much stuff to let you write, because it's real easy for me to hand out stuff, and it's real easy for you to throw that stuff away. But if you write something down, and if you write it yourself, it means more to you, and you learn more. And so my handouts are going to be pretty minimal. And I'll put some stuff on the board, and I would recommend to you that you get you a little notebook and you bring it and you make some notes. And I also recommend, if you're not offended by it, by the idea of it, that you write some notes in the margin of your Bible. Now, I'll tell you this, I have a Bible that my parents gave me back before I started school, and it's coming all to pieces. And I have written all through it over many years. And I go back now and I read some of the things that I wrote in the margin of the Bible, and I'm embarrassed that I wrote that down, because I thought, surely I knew that. You know, surely I didn't have to write that down. But we do. And when you make yourself some notes in the margin of your Bible, and if you don't want to make them in class, then you go back and filter through them, and it'll help you in, as you study with others. And I hope, my fondest hope out of this, besides you gaining some security for yourself, is that you will gain a confidence that you can sit down and talk with your family and friends about the gospel. Because you're going to have an approach that is going to be something that you're excited about sharing with them. And you're going to learn some things that you want other people to know. And that, in a nutshell, is why I'm preaching today. Because somebody taught me some things that I want you to know. And we won't get into the personal thing, but my life was headed in a completely different direction than preaching. I had no desire to preach. And in fact, I had a desire not to preach. But this changed my whole life. So, with some of those prefacing remarks, I'm going to give you an outline of the first 8 chapters of the book of Romans, and you can write that down if you would like. I'll try to remember to give it back to you if you remind me next week, because I didn't warn you to bring pencil and paper. Let me write it on the board. You're not supposed to leave stuff on this board, isn't that right? It kind of embeds itself in it. How about if I just give it to you? Do I need to write it down?
No.
Huh? You can say yes if you want me to. Romans 1:18-3:20. It's condemnation. Romans 1:18-3:20. Condemnation. And by the way, by the time we get to Romans chapter 3, verse 21, you're going to be ready to get there. Because between now and then is some of the most depressing stuff that you're going to ever have. And I'm going to warn you of that. Condemnation is not a pleasant subject. Chapter 3, verse 21 through chapter 5, verse 21. Second point. 3:21 through 5:21 is justification. Justification. These are some of those 18-wheeler words. Chapter 6 and 7. 6 and 7, sanctification. And you're going to think, when I'm giving you these words, that this is just a kind of a weird big word outline, but you'll love this outline before we get through. 6 and 7 is sanctification. Chapter 8 is glorification. Chapter 8 is glorification. And then just for your information, and I have no idea if we'll get into chapter 9 because my first goal is the first 8 chapters, but 9 through 11 is vindication. And vindication in 9 through 11, if you go through it and read, is talking about God and the Jews. Because all of these things that we learn in the first 8 chapters, the Jew sits back and he says, but God promised all these things to the Jews. He promised us all these things. And Paul's going to write to them, and he is going to, in essence, vindicate God. Because the Jew misunderstood some of the promises that God gave to the Jewish nation, took them in a way that they were never intended to be taken, and he's going to say, God has been faithful, and God has fulfilled the promises that he gave to you. And so that's going to be vindicating God. That's 9 through 11 is vindication, and 12 through 16 is application. That's practical application of everything that you've learned, 12 through 16. So 1:18 to 3:20 is condemnation, 3:21 to 5:21, justification, chapter 6 and 7, sanctification, chapter 8, glorification, chapter 9 through 11, vindication, chapter 12 through 16 is application. Now, if y'all will help me also, when somebody asks a question, I've made tapes of classes before, and somebody asks a question, and I just immediately answer that. If y'all will remind me to repeat the question for the tape, if I just start answering it, then somebody say, repeat the question, please. And so that whoever's going to listen to the tape can hear what the question is, or you get lost on it. So that's an outline. In 1:18 through 3:20, tell you a little quick story. Condemnation is until we understand how lost we are and how hopeless we are, then we'll never appreciate how saved we are. And I think that that's part of our part of the difficulty that we have in our society today. Janice and I talked about this week. There have been lots of changes since I started preaching. There have been changes in attitude in society since I've started preaching. And one of them that's obvious in my study and my teaching of Romans is that when I first started teaching, people were kind of like myself, the way I grew up. People believed that they were lost. They didn't have any confidence about being saved. And most people were not real shy about saying that. You didn't have a hard time causing people and helping people to understand that we were lost. When we got to the point of talking about how we're saved by grace through faith, then people really had a hard time with that. They really struggled with that, like myself. And for many years, I never ever went through a Romans class that I didn't look around when we got into chapter 3, that half or more of the class wouldn't just have their hands in their head, their head in their hands crying, because it was just too good to be true. It was just an incredible relief to them. And I liked that time. Times are different now, and it's harder, because people don't believe they're lost anymore. We think everybody's going to heaven. I'm okay, you're okay. We've been fed that stuff so much that even in the church, we kind of have this feeling that everybody's okay. You know, every good, sincere, religious person's okay. And so the hard part used to be persuading somebody that we're saved as a Christian. Now the hard part is persuading people that we're lost. And we want to fight it hard. And we really don't have. Now, I'm not saying you. I don't know about you. But I'm saying society as a whole at least has been fed this stuff. I'm okay. You're okay. You take the high road. I'll take the low road. And I'll meet you there. And, you know, one way is as good as another. And the church of your choice. And on and on and on and on. And all these things. We've been fed this stuff so much that we really don't feel a sense of lostness. And so my unfortunate task is, I've got to make you feel a sense of lostness. And that means I've got to take some stuff away from you. And it probably means for some of us that we're going to have to do some real soul searching and answer some questions that we'd prefer not, because it's just kind of pleasant to believe that everybody's okay and all my friends are going to go to heaven and we're just taking different roads. But until we understand how totally hopeless we are, you're not going to understand God's grace. And it's not going to mean, it's not going to motivate you. You'll never have a sense of urgency about the gospel. You'll never have an intensity until you understand how totally without hope you are and I am. And so my first job is to take away any hope that you might have. And you're going to be ready to get out of that first section on condemnation before we get out of it. A good friend attended class one time, and he traveled a long ways to come to the class I had invited him. In fact, he traveled every week, and so he came by, so he worked it out so that on Monday nights he came by the house and had the class with us, and then he left and drove on to Little Rock, which is about another 3 hours, and so he didn't get there till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. And he had all that time to think about that class as he was driving. And after about 3 classes, he came to me and he said, "Ken, I got a problem." And I said, "What's that?" He said, "When I started coming to this class, I had a little bit of hope, but I don't have any anymore." And I said, "Good." He said, "What do you mean, good?" I said, "That's my job. I've got to take away whatever hope you have. If that hope is founded in your actions and how good you are and what you deserve, I've got to take it all away." And I mean, we've got to get it all. It's kind of like I had an infirmity one time with a heel spur. And the doctor told me, I went to the doctor and I said, hey, I want you to go in there and cut that thing out. I mean, I lived with it for about 6 months until I was just nearly a physical wreck. And I was holding on to walls and everything else. The thing was killing me. And I went to the doctor and I finally said, okay, I want you to cut that thing out. And he laughed. And he said, there's lots of things we'll do before we'll cut it out. He said, do you know how complex that is in your heel? That's one of the most complex parts of your body. We'll do lots of things before we cut on it. And he said, that bone spur is just a little piece of bone that has irritated the flesh. And if we can get all of the inflammation out, then that tissue will accept that. But he said, we've got to get every bit of it. He said, I can get 98% of it quickly. But we've got to really work to get that last 2%. If we can ever get all the inflammation out, then that tissue will accept that. It did. It took 6 months of antibiotics, but it took care of it. I've got to get all of your hope. And whatever hope you hold on to for your own actions and how good you are, you're missing the boat. And I've got to get us all the way down, not just on our knees in front of the cross. We've got to get down on our belly and know we don't have one good thing that we deserve anything that God did for us. And we deserve to be eternally punished for all eternity, separated from God. And so when that's going to be our goal in our first part. Now, let me start out by asking the question, and I know that some of you, as I look through the class, there are some of you that have been in my small group classes here. And so you'll know the answer to some of these questions, and I'll just leave it up to you. I want you to contribute to the conversation as well. The first question that we're going to entertain is, why is a sinner lost? Has it ever bothered any of you about how is God going to judge a man who lives in some remote place of this world, who never heard about God, he never had a Bible, he never heard about baptism? How's God going to judge that guy? Has it ever bothered you? Well, boy, that really bothered me as a kid. I mean, it bothered me as an adult. And what is our standard answer whenever we, first of all, we don't like to think about it, but if we do think about it and we come with an answer, what's our answer generally? Anybody got it? Yeah. We'll usually say something like, well, God is a God of love, and he will, and we draw our conclusion, right? That's where we usually go with it. And that helps us live with this. And it, you know, it, we feel kind of kindly disposed with that answer. God is a God of love, and our implication is what? That God's going to be all right, right? If he never had an opportunity to hear the gospel, then how could he be condemned? Right? I mean, isn't that what your heart says? That's what my heart says. I mean, here's a guy that lived and died, and he never saw a Bible. He never heard about Jesus Christ. He never heard about the cross. Are there people, by the way, who live today that's true? There are. There are people who will die today who never heard the gospel. How's God going to judge that person? Well, I grew up hearing that that person was lost because he was never baptized or he never obeyed the gospel. And I want to tell you that while that's an answer, I don't think it's the right answer. I don't think that's why a person's lost. I believe a person is lost for a reason other than that. And I think I can demonstrate that to you. If Jesus Christ, and here's a question that I'm going to ask you to contemplate for the next 2 or 3 weeks, and you've got to answer this question with conviction in your own mind to be able to really progress beyond this. If Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, would man be lost or would he be saved? Now you don't just lip off the answer to that. You really got to think about that. If Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, would man be lost or would he be saved? I'm going to maintain that he'd be lost. Jesus said the Son of Man has come to seek and save what? That which was lost. And if that's not true, let's flip it over. And we're going to flip this coin back and forth a bunch of times in the next few weeks. If that's not true, then we'd be better off, and that person would be better off, if Jesus Christ had never come, if he's going to be okay without him. Right or wrong? You don't have to answer it. Everybody's a little reluctant here. That's good. I maintain that if Jesus Christ had never come to this earth, man would be lost. If that's not true, if man would be okay without Jesus, if Jesus had never come, then I wish he had never come. Because now there are going to be some people lost. What about a person who has heard the gospel and rejected it? What's going to happen to him? Is he going to be lost? Yeah, we all say, yeah, he's going to be lost. So then by that reasoning, if the gospel never was preached and he never rejected, he's going to be okay, then the gospel's not very good news, is it? Because here's a guy that's okay and now he's lost. I'm telling you, I don't believe that's true. I believe he was lost, whether he ever hears the gospel or whether he doesn't. And if that's true, then the gospel has nothing to do with him being lost. And the responses to the gospel, baptism, I don't believe a person's going to be lost because he hadn't been baptized. I don't believe a person's going to be lost because he didn't go to church. I don't believe a person's going to be lost because he didn't take the Lord's Supper. I believe he was already lost if those things didn't exist. If there was no church and there was no Lord's Supper, I believe he'd already be lost. I believe Jesus came to the earth to seek and save that which was already lost. And if that's true, then lostness has nothing to do with the gospel. Because if the gospel was never preached, man would be lost. Now, I've got some proven to try to prove that to you. But I'm telling you where I'm going. And see, some of our little nice, little sweet, little answers that we've lipped off all these years don't really solve the problem. They just make us feel better. So is a man lost or is he saved? And why? And how is God going to judge a guy that's never had a chance to hear the gospel? We're going to address all those questions and a bunch more. But those are some that really, really bothered me. And until I feel like I got those sorted out in my mind, then I didn't have a lot of confidence about the gospel and my response to it and how I live in response to God. But once those things got sorted out in my mind, it changed my whole life. Now, I've got to tell you, I didn't like all the answers. But then God didn't ask me. And I go back in the Old Testament and God did some things that I don't like. I'm sorry, but you know, there's some ways that God acted that bother me. Now, I acknowledge right off the top of, on top of everything, consistently, I acknowledge God is right. And what God did is right. I know that. And I'll maintain that up, but there are some things that just don't sit very well with me. And if God had asked me, I would have given him some advice differently than the way he acted. But he didn't choose to ask me. And he's right. And so whenever I read some things in the Bible that bother me about the way God deals with man, then I know one thing. I need to adjust the way I understand things. Because what God did was right. And if I don't like it and it gives me heartburn, then I need to go back and study that some more and pray about it some more. And it's going to be, I'm going to maintain, and I'll tell you where we're going with this first section, I'm going to maintain and try to prove to you that God will take the standard that a man lives by. He'll let him choose his own standard and judge him by it, and he's going to be lost. And that puts things on a really personal basis. People are not lost en masse. We're lost one at a time. And we're not lost because of what somebody else did. We're lost because of what we've done. And so some of our little platitudes, if that's not true, then if somebody's okay without the gospel, then I've got a real question for you. Why would you take him the gospel? If he's okay without it, please don't take it to him, because he might reject it, and what happens to him? He just got lost. And if he was okay without it, then we don't need it. And it's not good news. If he was okay without it, and now he's lost after he heard it, it wasn't good news, was it? And the word gospel means good news. And it's only good news when you understand that you're lost, and that you have no hope, and that you've exhausted all your possibilities of being saved, and you've done everything within your power, and you can't get yourself saved, and you can't do anything to reconcile yourself to God once you've sinned, that you have no hope, none. And I've got to take it all away. And so if a man is lost because he's not obeyed the gospel, then if he never heard the gospel, he's not lost. Does that make sense to you? You with me? Now, some of these things you're going to have to do some thinking about. If a man is lost because he's not obeyed the gospel, then if he never had a chance to hear it, he's not lost. The gospel has nothing to do with man being lost. It's two different topics, and we've run them both together, and that's been part of our confusion. We've got to learn to separate why a person is lost and how a person is saved. They're two totally different topics. Two different topics. And if the gospel had never been preached, I maintain man would be lost. And if that's true, then his lostness has nothing to do with the gospel and all the things associated with it. So that's our first lesson.